Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
Welcome back to Behind the Studio Door. We're here. We're queer. We're doing great. I'm Molly Darling, your host, and with my partner, Christian Rivera.
Hello, it's me. I don't know why I just clicked into this voice, but this is the one that feels good, and it allows me to start the podcast in a way that, you know, makes me feel engaged. I feel like I could have a conversation now. I probably will not stay in this voice, but I'd really like to, actually. It's like a really good
one. If you notice, he cannot hold an accent for more than about 2.5
seconds. No, and you notice
those
nuances way better than I do. And then I end up changing into something completely different. And somehow I'm a West Virginian old man. So anyway, hi, it's great to be here.
Hey, great to be here. How are you, Chris Lindstrom, producer extraordinaire?
Shout out to Christian right off the set of Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a nice day. I'm getting a little crispy today. And now I'm excited to sit here and be more producer-y than ever before.
Heck yes. Yeah, I've learned a lot. I don't know what that means, but we're about to find out.
I learned a lot filming that movie.
Yeah.
Like you said, we're here and we're queer.
We're queer. Let's go. We've also got an amazing human here with us today. Hannah Acabado is a Filipino published author, illustrator, packaging designer, and mom of two boys. Freaking superstar. Her makeup brand, Filipinta Beauty, celebrates the culture and beauty of the Philippines and is a playground for her creativity. She was awarded as one of the top 25 Filipino creatives of 2024, and she's the author of My Mama is a Work of Art, a children's book about tattoos, kindness, and acceptance. Fuck yes. Hello, Hannah.
Hey. Hey, guys. I love that. I wrote that, by the way.
You did.
So, you know how I see myself.
But yeah,
no,
yeah,
kidding.
Right.
How are
right.
you guys?
Very beautifully.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're great. How are you doing?
I'm good. You know what? You know, because I'm pretty new to Rochester. Yeah. So, like, I'm so confused with the weather here.
Yeah.
It's like up and down.
I don't mm-hmm. feel
it's like, wait, it's warm right now, and then tomorrow it's snowing.
Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten used to it after all this time of being okay. here. There's, like, this there's that temporary, that like false spring.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It throws me off every time, and it gives you this false sense of hope, and then you're back into the madness. I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. Why am I still here?
Yeah.
Well, it's a good city, that's why.
And my people come from colder climates, and I'm still not used to it. Like,
right.
The fall spring mm-hmm. dynamic, it's like, yeah, 80.
Well,
and
my
sun,
ancestry's
and
from
then...
Puerto Rico and, you know, tropical blood, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like, I need humidity everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, exactly. I will fall apart as a person.
Yeah, you get a little bit of it in the summertime here, but not a lot.
Not a lot, no.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, so how long have you been in Rochester?
So I think almost 3 years. I think okay. I moved here 2022, mm-hmm. like late 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, I'm shocked by the cold because I did come from New York City.
Okay.
So it's not that different, but like, I don't know. It just hits different here.
Yeah. New York City is like south enough, I feel like, mm-hmm. that it doesn't get hit with all the weird bands of snow and like the cold snaps that we have here.
Yeah, I feel like the buildings shield it for some reason, you know, like it's just different.
You're just in a pod.
Yeah.
Well, we get the jet stream here too. So it's like this weird wind transition between pressure systems and stuff. And that's been a weird thing to adjust to also.
Mm-hmm.
So this weather episode of the podcast is
exactly.
going to be very, very weather. Helpful for people.
With the weather with Filipinta Beauty. Speaking of that, though, so I have so many questions in so many different areas, but we'll just start with, like, you have so many different creative hats in your intro, we talked about how you're a mom, you are an artist, a designer, you have this beauty brand, you wrote a book. When someone asks you what you do, how do you introduce yourself?
Oh, I just say, like, I'm a serial hobbyist. Mm-hmm. That's
it. I love
it.
That.
Yeah, because I, you know, I get so overfixated about many mediums. Mm-hmm. And then right now, this is the only one that's stuck. Mm-hmm. You know, I like throw, how do you say, like pasta or spaghetti on the wall and see if it sticks. This is the spaghetti that's stuck on the wall.
Yeah.
Which is makeup, which is so interesting because, like, I feel like it's an underutilized art form.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen anyone, like, utilize it as an art form like I do. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, so tell me about that. The inception of Filipinta Beauty, like, where did it come from? What was the inspiration behind it? Tell me the story.
Yeah, so I got here when I was 25. I came to the U.S., so I lived a full life in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And so when I got here, I was like, wow, this is such a big culture shock.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because I feel like the Philippines is very Westernized. Mm-hmm. But then I got here and I'm like, wait. This is not the same. This is not what I thought it would be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like the food is different. Our McDonald's has rice.
Right.
So they offer rice in McDonald's, even where the burger, the patty is rice.
Wow.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, when I got here, there's no rice at all. Like that was the big one for me. Mm-hmm. And then just like how people interact with each other. So what happened was I started like drawing more, illustrating more about Filipino culture. And for some reason, I became a cultural advocate for it, too, like through my makeup. And it became makeup because it just like kind of fell into my lap.
Right.
I'm a product packaging designer also. And so I was thinking, let me make a portfolio of just packaging design. But instead of doing a mock-up, why don't I make it like a real, you know, makeup brand, real fake makeup brand, basically.
Right.
I made a website. I ordered some products. And it just like became viral.
That's awesome.
Overnight, literally.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, oh, that's cool. Let me try it again with another release. And this one also went viral and was sold out in an hour.
Wow.
So it just kept going. I was like, oh, wait, I think I have something here.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how it really started. Mm-hmm. And it just became like my playground for my creativity and my advocacy for culture because like we are the second largest Asian American group in America. Well, in America, right?
Yeah.
And but there's really nothing, but, you know, less known stuff about Filipino people.
Yeah.
And this is like a way for me to like bridge cultures together and just showcase what Filipino culture is through makeup.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. What was the first mock product that you made?
So it's called Diwata. It's an eyeshadow palette. Diwata means fairy or like goddess.
Okay.
Forest goddess. And it was, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's this, I think she's 100-something-year-old, not like 104 years old, oldest tattoo artist in the world. Mm-hmm. Her name's Wang Ud, and she's like, you know, covered in tattoos. She's from the tribe. And she was my, how do I say it? Because while we're talking, I'm actually translating everything in real time in my head from Tagalog to English.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what is that word? Mm-hmm. So I feel like you got to help me sometimes
when I
can process it.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah. But like, she's from the tribe and she was like my inspiration for the eyeshadow palette. And I think that's why it became like a big thing because she is absolutely big. Like I'm surprised she's not national artist of the Philippines.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Well, and having something that's specifically, you know, designed around somebody, it has a tie. It's not just branding. And that's the thing I think people can see through the modern veneer, you know, the thin layer of branding. And when somebody's doing something with intention and tied to a real experience or somebody that they're really inspired by, I think people can see that even though they might not recognize it mentally, they can feel it in a way that's hard to describe sometimes.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. I feel validated, seriously, because I always have this imposter syndrome too.
Yeah.
Because sometimes.
You too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. The worst. Uh-huh. So, yeah. Thank you for saying that. I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you mentioned like throwing spaghetti at the wall, and has that always been like your approach to creativity, your mantra of being a hobbyist is just like, I have this idea, let me try it and see what happens.
Oh yeah.
Just always been that way? Or did you feel like you had to like get there at some point?
I was just thinking, like, you know, there's so many ways to express your creativity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, some days I'm like, let me try watercolor. Mm-hmm. And because I'm one of those where it's like, if I don't get it on the first try, I'm not, this is not for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I just keep looking for the next thing. And right now it's 3D printing.
Ooh.
And I had to like learn the whole software and everything. But mm-hmm. now it changed my packaging game because now right. I make the packaging from scratch too.
Right.
That's so cool.
So, yeah. So basically, yes, I still use it spaghetti. How do you say it? Like metaphor?
Yeah. Analogy? Yes.
Analogy, yeah.
Analogy, metaphor.
Metaphor, yeah. Metaphor is more like a meaning and beauty in something. Analogy is like, yeah, like an action.
Yeah.
Spaghetti at the wall. Action.
Yeah, and you described Philippine to Beauty as like your playground for creativity. Has there been a favorite moment of play or exploration so far?
All of it, because before having Philippine to Beauty, mm-hmm. I was, you know, working for other brands. I make packaging for them. I make products. And when you're a designer, you can't really play around as much.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's that distinction between being an artist and a designer.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I've been a designer most of my life because I make stuff for people. I make mm-hmm. stuff for brands. And with Philippinta, I can do whatever I want.
Right.
You know, so there's no holds barred. Because mm-hmm. like with, you know, when you make packaging, let's say for, am I allowed to say brands here? Let's not say it. Like the big ones.
Yeah,
let's say the big ones. Like
I don't think we're big
stores.
Enough for them to care.
Yeah, we are withholding on purpose because we do not want L'Oreal to, we want them to be a sponsor. So no, you can say
I'll be the
you want.
Sponsor, Philippine to Beauty.
Great.
I'm here for it.
This is a sponsor for you. Yeah. Say it in every sentence, Philippine to Beauty.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Shameless plug for sure.
Yeah. Every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but yeah. Where was I?
Favorite playful moments.
Oh yeah, like I can do anything I want to do, because like in a grocery store setting, for example, you have to make the brand name bigger, right. Or you know, just stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's so many technicalities, and I didn't care for technicalities for this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I make sardine shaped lip balms, like who cares,
right,
you know? So
yeah, you get to take all of the, because I relate to that. I've been a graphic designer since probably 15 years old or sooner.
Oh, wow.
So I understand like being a service creator, like someone who is just, you're taking orders from clients or from a customer or from your boss. And there's something that has to live within constraints. And you just, you know, in order to make a living and get the paycheck, you just got to do that. But you know, the other side of that, as you're saying, is like the need to just, in a way, take some of those lessons from those constraints and put them into your creativity. But it is like really giving yourself a runway to be like, okay, I am my boss now. It's not having a boss. It's mm-hmm. I am my boss now. And it sounds like you've really embraced that you are your own boss. You get to decide the product, the creative vision, and what it's about. And clearly you have, you know, your own ancestry and your personal history and those things as inspirations to pull from and continue to go forward with. Does that make it easier for you to stick with this? Or do you feel like you're still wanting to throw spaghetti and it's hard to stick with this? Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, no. Let me think. Because sometimes, some days I'm like, yes, I want to continue this. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for 5 years now at this point.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is the longest thing that I've ever done in my life.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm like, oh, I want to focus more on my bookmaking or like mm-hmm. my illustrating. Mm-hmm. Or because my day job is still product and packaging design and mm-hmm. brand design.
Right.
And sometimes I'm like, why don't I just do this like forever?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's just, it's really hard to decide. So I'm mm-hmm. just like, whatever I feel like when I wake up, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, and who knows, like that, having that stability, I think that's important. Like you mentioned, first of all, you mentioned the imposter syndrome part. I mean, as a part of this podcast, like I'm a big proponent on the idea that there's like, there are service artists and then there are like expressive artists, right? There's the artist on stage that is belting out their own original song. And then there are the artists that are the makeup artists. They are the costumers. They are the people that are doing the almost like labor type of creativity. And I think there are some of us that feel like a hybrid of that. And maybe you could tell me if I'm wrong here, but if I'm picking it up, because I'm tracking some relatability there where I feel like having this sort of focused energy in my job, like a certain kind of stability, allows for me to then be wild elsewhere, right? Because if you put all of the focus on wild energy all the time, throwing spaghetti at the wall all the time, then that becomes the panic to try to make that make money. And you don't have this stability. So there's something about that relationship to, you know, sticking with the job and having it and making that work. And then the other side of it is like, yeah, but like, that doesn't mean I get to stifle my full on creativity. I mean, Molly and I, we've talked about this a lot, mm-hmm. where we've both recently taken on full-time jobs again, because for a long time we were struggling with trying to make our art work. But like, because it's so expressive to us, it can be a challenge to then have to like make it into a business, and you got to find customers, and you know, you still have to do all of that stuff. So it's either you do it for you or you do it for someone else. And then you get to kind of, you know, to make a Severance reference, you have,
we've been making Severance references all day.
Yeah. So you have your artist self. That's like the full on, like creative person that gets to just play and express and make unique products or something that's a part of your history and your passions. And then there's the part of you that's just like, I need to make sure I have chicken at home and stuff like that. So, Yeah. So anyway, I don't have anywhere I was really going with that rant, but it was something that is kind of resonating. Does that resonate with you, what I'm saying? Like this sort of almost feeling like the work at home or the work with the product design, I should say, is like creating this anchor for you. And then you get to just do whatever you want as a result otherwise.
No, totally. I totally get that. Yeah. And that's why I have to do like all these other side hustles as well. Mm-hmm. Because back then when I just like did Filipinta Beauty the whole time, mm-hmm. I was making enough to actually, you know, just like not do the other things. Mm-hmm. But then after a while, it's like you have to appease to the algorithm gods. It's a lot of social media. And I felt very exhausted by it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like just you have to do it every day because you're only as good as your last video on there.
Right.
And I feel like as, you know, as an artist, as a designer, I don't really like that.
Yeah. No.
Like having to go there, having to film, like mm-hmm. sometimes I just want to create.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I downscaled a lot because mm-hmm. I can't keep up with the demand. I can't keep up with the social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want to be part of that like consumerism lifestyle anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I just make like limited edition stuff. Yeah. And then I do other things as well to like to continue doing Filipinta. Because mm-hmm. before, like, yes, it was very lucrative for me. But like at what expense?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't giving enough time to my family.
Right.
Like it became like a big, how do I say it? Challenge. Yeah. It was a big challenge because my kids were really little.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had my...
And that's even harder because when your kids are little, like, oh my gosh, being a mom and an artist is hard enough as it mm-hmm. is. But then you're also the business owner.
Exactly.
Who has to wear all these hats. That's impossible. Yeah.
And I had to have my, he was one, my youngest was one, and had to like put him in my chest all the time, you mm-hmm. know, like with the baby wrap.
Yeah.
Like I had to work like that. And then, you know, when they're sleeping, it's 1 a.m. And then my husband would be like, well, we're not hanging out at all. Like what's going on?
Yeah.
Right.
So I had to choose between, you know, sanity and my family and the booming business. And I chose my family, of course. Like,
Heck yeah. And I think that's a really important point to make, you know, because that was part of it for me, too, is going back to having a full time day job was that the pressure was becoming too great to mm-hmm. be on social media all the time. And, you know, like with kids. And I feel like also as moms and women, there's so much put on our shoulders already. And then for you to have to juggle all of those things, it can be too much. So it's like good on you for figuring out the ways to like balance that weight so that you can continue to play, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love that you're playing with illustration and like writing now. So I would love to get into that a little bit more and like hear about this book that you have written and published, right? About tattoos and kindness, and I have a lot of tattoos, so I'm like really into it.
Oh, I should have brought the book for you.
Oh my gosh, I would love really a copy.
Cool. Yeah, no, because I always thought about, you know, tattooed moms, mm-hmm. so I feel like that would be perfect for you. I was thinking about it, but I was like, you know what, I'm late. I'm like, you know, if I leave like a minute before this, I'm gonna be late. So when I see you again, because I see you around all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm just we'll connect.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that happened. So with my first baby, I was like breastfeeding and in bed a lot because he's the type of baby who doesn't want to like be put down.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I had to
my
like
son's
hold
like
him.
That too.
Yeah. But you know what? I loved it. I was, you know, first time mom. But then I was like, oh, I can't do any art. I can't use clay. I can't draw. So I was on my phone a lot and I just started writing. And after 2 years, you know, he was pretty big. I sent it to a publisher, not a publisher, an agent. Mm-hmm. And then she replied to me the next day and I was like, oh wow, this is really interesting. Cause like I always take chances. I like message so many people just to like get my foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And this one like just came quickly. So I thought this is destiny. This is my fate to have this book published. And it was quick. Like it was acquired by a publisher pretty quickly.
That's awesome.
But it took us another 2 years because I had to like illustrate every single thing.
And so you wrote it and illustrated it.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It was a lot. And you know, like English isn't my first language. Yeah. So it's a rhyming book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, like, I can't believe.
What a great challenge for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, let me sent make a rhyming book
exactly.
in English.
I was like, I sent it to them and they were like, oh, we have to change a bunch of stuff here because it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, let me try my best. So there was a lot of back and forth, but I feel so happy that I was with a, you know, an agent that was very understanding and a publisher that, you know, liked this type of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And where did the idea for the story come from?
So in the Philippines, like we have a lot of tribes and, you know, tribes usually have tattoos on them. Mm-hmm. But it became taboo because we were colonized by Spain for like 400 plus years. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, this is not good. Tattoos are not good. Mm-hmm. So now it's like when I see tattoos, I think it's very cool. It's like self-expression as well and a part of our heritage. Mm-hmm. But when I got my first tattoo, my mom was like, why did you do that? Why did you taint your skin?
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, I think it looks cool. Like, I don't know why you're mad. So yeah, I just wanted to like make a book about that because it's not just about tattoos, but also diversity, acceptance, all that stuff.
Right. And like the assumptions of what people think people with tattoos are, like who they are.
Right. And embracing that. I really love that you also wrapped that in with being a mom too, because you know, like having tattoos as a mom still, I mean, it's becoming less taboo in the United States, I feel like, but it still is a thing where it's like you could walk into some places and people assume XYZ about you because you have these tattoos.
Yeah, there's like an intimidation factor to it too.
I have
like,
had moments where I've walked into places because I have this shaved head. I'm like 6 feet tall. I'm like intimidating looking if I'm not smiling and just walk into a place, you know? And so I've had reactions about that from people, and then my kid will walk in and I'll pick up my kid and all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, she must not be scary because there's a child, you know, like it's just a really interesting
It's like the idea of being a mom like softens it all of a sudden kind of thing.
You can contain multitudes. You can still be scary.
I am a scary motherfucker. It's fine.
She can be.
But I love that you combined all of those things into this book. And what was that process like for you as you were illustrating and, you know, exploring all these new, maybe new to you areas of creativity at the same time?
Yeah, because like, you know, when I was younger, I thought, oh, I'm going to be an author. I'm going to be this and that. And then when I was already put in that spot, I'm like, wait, this is more than I, you know, it's, I think, how do you say that term when it's like you bit off more than you can chew? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was what happened to me.
Yeah. You were like, oh, I took a bite and now it's a whole elephant.
Yeah. And now I have to like keep illustrating and have to, you know, because it's still a process. You still have to like work with someone to make it marketable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like to me, it was like, this is a whole new thing. You don't just write and illustrate. You have to like have the approval of like the publisher and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a really new thing for me, but very exciting. And now I need to make more, right? Because like in a contract, you have to like make certain amount of books and I'm like very behind.
So,
Because I would send them something and they would be like, oh, you know, we can't be, make a book about farts. like something a little more lighthearted.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
A little more lighter. Sure. Not, my mama as a work of art is not lighthearted enough. We need some farts up in here.
Exactly. Yeah. Like something simpler, something more like easier to digest is what they're trying to make me do. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's a big part of me as an artist too. Like I'm not a big advocate, but I am like in different ways. Mm-hmm. So culture to me is very important, and diversity.
Right.
You know, because as a minority in America, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is something I'm very passionate about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to dig into that more. We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. Yeah, so diversity, especially in the moment we find ourselves in, mm-hmm. is really fucking important. So talk more about that. Like, tell me more about your passion for it. Obviously, like, as someone who is coming from having a whole other life in a different country, in a different culture, tell me about what's on your mind with all of that in this moment.
So with diversity, I really think that my work for Filipino Beauty is important because, you know, Filipino Americans also, they want to connect with their roots. And sometimes, mm-hmm. well, a lot of the times actually, which is very surprising to me, they don't get taught about, you know, what, where their mom or dad came from. And they, when they grow older, they're like, oh, wait, I have this other part of me that I want to explore. And so I feel like Filipinta really helps them with that. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I do this because I'm nostalgic. Like, I want to.
Welcome to the world of Punches and Popcorn, where we dive into the bone-breaking and kung-fu-kicking world of martial arts cinema. Join us on the path as we explore a new movie every episode, discussing the history, fighting styles, science, and more from a broad range of fight films. Everything from Bruce Lee to Jean-Claude Van Damme to John Wick. There's plenty of room in our temple of couch potato style. So listen in and subscribe to Punches and Popcorn on your favorite podcast app.
Go back to like that time where I was in the Philippines and, you know, I try to like sprinkle it in my everyday life, like even with my family, my kids, especially I teach them Tagalog or Filipino. That's one of the Filipino languages. And I am also, funnily enough, I'm area VP now of the Filipino American Association of Rochester.
Wow.
Because I think it's very important. Like we have to reach out to all these Asian and Filipino communities, like whatever you need, you know, so... Yeah, I just think it's very important.
Yeah, and I actually think you touched on something. We were off camera for a second, and Christian, you were talking about finding your way into this conversation too as the son of parents who are from Puerto Rico, but you were raised in Philly.
Yeah.
And it made me think of when you were talking about kind of the disconnect that maybe happens from Filipinos who are born and raised in America and maybe are Americanized. I don't know if it has something to do with that immigrant mentality.
I think it does. That's exactly where I think I was going to go with it, is that my parents very much were about Americanizing us. And it almost, it sounded very similar to the energy that you were talking about when I think it was your grandmother or your mother, somebody was saying, like, you know, don't put that stuff on your body because it very much represents like almost standing out in a negative way based on the colonizing aspect of the space, like of Spain's influence. And so that to me just made me think of my parents wanting to Americanize us, and so much to the point of basically almost being racist against Puerto Ricans in a lot of ways, and not to call out my parents in a negative way, but that's what happened when I was a kid. And really pushed us. It was the '90s, but like really pushed us towards like assimilation of really fitting in of like, don't be like the people in the hood that are like where some of my cousins were living and some other people that represented basically people from the island. And, you know, I have, I'd say the benefit and sometimes the detriment of looking Caucasian. I am pretty light skinned relative to other Puerto Ricans, but if you put Molly and I's skin together, it's very different.
It's very clear. It's very clear that I'm the Caucasian one.
Yeah. 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 So there's something there about like, the colonization influence and how there is a certain reclaiming of the tribal ancestral history, which is really interesting to do through, I always think of things like tattoos or jewelry or makeup. I think of like the Maori influences from like New Zealand and all of that, where you've just got like the haka and these like amazing tribal expressions that people keep within their culture. And for me as a Puerto Rican, I don't know if my ancestry is connected to the Taino, which are the natives from Puerto Rico and south of there. But there is a desire to be reconnected to some of that, to some degree. And so for you, you know, being connected, you know, natively, being from there, it is important to stay connected as an individual, but like, it's almost like this, it's the same thing we all do, right? We're trying to spread beliefs. We're trying to spread stories. We're trying to spread art through all of that. But in a way, it's like reclaiming territory for your people and for yourself and for everyone who is here to say like, no, this is like kind of the point of America, is the ability to have everyone be multicultural, is for us to be able to not delude ourselves, but to be fully ourselves in these moments. So I kind of want to lead that to asking about your relationship to authenticity, because mm-hmm. this feels like a very connected part of your authentic expression. And there's another part of you that feels like a hustler. Right. Exactly. There's this other part of you that's just like, I know what I need to get done. I know how to make it get done. I know how to connect with people. I know how to, like, even just the idea of you casually sending emails, like just to connect, like that's something that a lot of artists have a hard time doing. And I want to highlight that as like a valuable skill that seems very, I don't want to say effortless, but there's a certain flow to you that you're just like, yeah, this is just what I need to do. Right. So I'm curious about your relationship to that hustler, marketer, you know, creator part of you. And then now bringing in this authenticity and having that suddenly click with people, like, are you finding something in yourself as an authentic expression? Did you have to discover that? Or is that just something that's always been there?
So that's really a great question, because it's really funny, because when I got to the U.S., that's when I started to really feel like, oh, wait, I love being Filipino. Because when you're in the Philippines, you're thinking, oh, I want to be Americanized. Like, I want to yeah. eat all the Hershey's and all these imported things that we only get in duty free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when I got here, I was like, wait, no, actually, I want to be Filipino. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where it comes from. Mm-hmm. And with my hustling mentality, I think it's the immigrant mindset. Like, yeah. you know, we were not rich, mm-hmm. but my family did not make us feel like we didn't have anything. We were poor. Yeah. But because my parents were like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to do this. Like, they're hustlers, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that it really set my mind to like have that kind of mindset too, like they did.
Yeah.
And especially with Philippine Tip Beauty, I feel like I have to do it in the mm-hmm. social media space. I think I got in there early too, mm-hmm. to go viral like that and have a business out of it. But now it's getting harder and harder. Like, yeah. you have to hustle more. There's yeah. more influencers, more makeup brands. Mm-hmm. Every celebrity and their mom has their own makeup
brand. More competition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, oh, I'm not a makeup brand. I'm actually a cultural advocate. Like, I yeah. just kind mm-hmm. of pivot it to
right.
however I want
to. You find to. Your differentiator. Mm-hmm. And if anything, it's like the drilling in one layer deeper to something that's unique to you mm-hmm. and your experience.
Yeah, because like, also, I just remembered, there was this brand, they released, I don't know if you guys know what Ube is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Ube has become like a very big thing, right? Yeah. And then one makeup brand, they're not Filipino,
mm-hmm.
but they called it an Ube collection, mm-hmm. but there was no ode to,
right.
you know, like the Filipino
right.
connection of it.
Because, it was just like the name.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I was like, wait a minute, like Ube is not even colored like that. It was like lilac. Yeah. So oh. like for Filipino skin, it doesn't even look good.
Right.
And I'm thinking like, I made an Ube eyeshadow palette a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I'm not really out here to be like mm-hmm. selling thousands, millions. I just want people to know like, hey, Ube is from the Philippines. It's native to
yep.
our country. Mm-hmm. And this is why this is the palette, eyeshadow palette that I made, just because right. I want you to know that this
is traditional, it's cultural, mm-hmm. but it's also practical because of your mm-hmm. actual skin color and the palettes that are exactly. available.
Mm-hmm. And we always think about like complexions, you know,
right.
like Filipinos, like I think in general, people have different mm-hmm. complexions, like no matter mm-hmm. where you're from.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So in the Philippines, there's like really like light complexions. We call them mestizas. And then mm-hmm. morenas, like me, well, I'm a little lighter now because I've been here for like 9 years.
Yeah.
So I lost a lot of the pigment.
It was the same like, with me.
Yeah. 10 days a year. Yeah.
I lived in San Diego before I came here and I looked proper so Puerto Rican.
Right?
And now I've been here and I'm like, you know, Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Well, it's so interesting, especially something like ube, which is so defining of a cuisine as well, like mm-hmm. and it's so, you know, of, you know, the of that region. It's one of those foods that is, you know, crosses over. Yes, it's Filipino, it crosses over, and it's so identifiably Southeast Asian and islands and that kind of culture that it it can feel bad when you see somebody else just using it because it's on trend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody just grabbing, Korean motifs because, you know, South Korean culture is in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. they haven't lived it. They haven't, they're not trying to respect it. They're just trying to grab what can be grabbed.
Yeah, right. I feel like that energy really speaks to, because we've been kind of talking about it, but like the homogenization, like the flattening that happens with colonizing culture. Like,
yeah.
I love the conversation that we're having now, because even as someone who has different cultural backgrounds and norms, I feel like it's important for everybody to feel connected to whatever their indigenous like roots are.
Right.
And you doing that for Filipinos is like so, but it also affects everyone else, right? Because then it's like we get to actually see the expression, the spectrum of colors that are specifically Filipino, that are specifically Puerto Rican, that are, you know, and it just adds to our color story, if you will.
Yeah, because, you know, like with makeup, there's undertones that you have to think about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they say, like, Asians have a yellow undertone, but that's not true. I have a gray undertone. I have a neutral undertone.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when we make makeup, we always think about, like, these underlying things. Like, Filipino is not just one color. Like, Asians are not just yellow. Like, there's other colors, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, we always think about this, and we come up with a color that is perfect for all skin tones, and that is possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I see other makeup brands saying like, oh, this is like, we have five shades of foundation or makeup, mm-hmm. like you can do more.
Right.
You can definitely expand it. There's so many colors out there.
Well, it's so important and interesting to come from the cultural advocacy angle, because again, it is easy to do a cash grab and try to grab like, oh, that's a cool name. Let me try to make something out of it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, there's a reason that this name was a thing. There's a reason that, like, you know, this color works for this complexion. I've seen it on shows like Shark Tank. There's just this increasing number of this interesting like product lineup starting to come out for different complexions, and the challenge of the economics of it, because there are people who want to scale it to a massive degree, but it actually feels like it's bringing you a lot of peace to say like, my goal isn't to make this like a nationwide massive whatever. It's like, no, my goal is to be an advocate. My goal is to share a story. My goal is to like share this experience and share, I don't know, in a way you said your nostalgia, to share that feeling of wanting to be connected to home by feeling like you're not assimilating to American culture by wearing American makeup, mm-hmm. so to speak, but you're wearing what feels good to you and what feels natural to you and finding your connection between home and here. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That could be poetic sometimes.
Yeah, you totally are.
I almost shed a tear.
Oh, good. Great. Almost is good enough for me. I don't need the proof.
Almost is good enough.
I trust your interpretation. Yeah.
It's the intention that counts.
It's the intention that counts. Yeah.
Yeah. And with the nostalgia that comes through around all these things that you're making, how do you choose? Like, what's your creative process with choosing what comes out next? Or is it just like, oh, you think of something and then you make it? Or do you have a specific process of finding inspiration?
So I'm very impulsive, but for this one, I actually had a 5-year plan.
Wow.
So I already planned it like 5 years ago.
Wow.
And now I have to make more because it's already 5 years. Yeah. So I'm all out of it. And then the pandemic happened. So like 2 years, I had nothing. Mm-hmm. So like, I think it was 2023 or 2024. I like just like came out with collections on top of each other because mm-hmm. I feel like I had to like, you know, like the 2 years that I was not doing anything.
Right.
I had to like pull it out.
Make up
me.
For it. Mm-hmm. You were exactly. like, okay, here's all this stuff, rapid fire.
Exactly. So now 2025, I'm like, oh, let me relax a little bit because I went crazy the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so now I'm thinking, now what? I have nothing. Time mm-hmm. for my impulsive thoughts to, you know, take over and maybe I'll find something there.
Yeah. Time to see which impulsive thought wins next.
But right now I'm doing more food because like nothing says culture. More than food, you know? So I do a lot of food related items and people are eating it up. Pun unintended, you know what I mean?
That was delightful. Wow.
So is that the, you know, the color palette that you're using, the inspiration for the palette is from food items or is it more?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You actually make them in the shapes of these items.
Yes, I do make them in the shapes of that.
Oh, that's really cool. Uh-huh. Yeah. I love that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So my most famous one recently, right? Like my bestseller is, it's a lip balm, but it's shaped like a sewing kit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not a sewing kit, a cookie tin. Because, you know, like when you go to your grandma's house, you see a cookie tin and you're like, oh, yes, perfect. Let me get.
That's a sewing kit.
Yeah. Exactly. You open it and it's like a sewing kit. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So like every single cookie. So you either get a cookie or a sewing kit.
Uh-huh.
So it's random.
You're not sure which one you're going to get. Love that's brilliant. Yeah.
So every single one, like every, the cookie's like tiny, tiny, like a molecule shape, tiny. And I, you know, I put them in individually, like one by one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty expensive for a lip balm. It's like $35 for a single one.
Mm-hmm.
But like I make everything.
It's unique.
Yeah.
It's art because it's handmade. Mm-hmm. Like I think you must have made a video or story about it where you're using the tweezers and literally placing every cookie one by one into the container. And it's like, that's art.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It takes forever, like 2 hours for one thing.
Yeah.
So I have to like think about it more like maybe I can do a mold that actually looks like this already. So I could just like plop it in there.
Right. Yeah.
And make it cheaper so that more people can actually buy it. Because a lot of my community, a lot of my buyers are like, oh, I'm going to save up for it because I can't afford it now because it is expensive because it is art. And I don't want to be like I said earlier, like I don't want to be part of like late stage capitalism.
Yeah. You're not diluting it. Yeah. You're not trying to scale it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to treat it with the respect it's frankly asking of you to give it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did it mean to you to be named like one of the top Filipino artists, because that's really cool. Want to give you your flowers for that, because that's amazing.
well obviously the imposter syndrome kicked in right away. I'm like, wait, are you for real? And then, you know, when we were doing the because I didn't get to go to the interview or like the shoot or anything, so I had to shoot it in my studio, and I was like, wow, I'm really part of these people, like seriously, because I was looking at the list and I'm like, what did I do to deserve this? But that was really cool. Like I never expected it. And I just, every time I do get how do I say, like press, because I never contact press. They just kind of pick it up because it's the viral thing.
Right.
So I just like, wow, they really want to cover me or whatever.
Right.
And I'm always very grateful because, like I said, like I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't think I should be here. I don't deserve this.
Oh. That's wild.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're fucking awesome.
Thank you.
It's a challenge. I mean, you know, imposter syndrome is a natural, I think it's a natural part of the artist process. And I think Seth Godin said it once where he was like, of course you're an imposter. You're doing something you haven't done before. Like, you are literally an imposter. So the feeling of imposter syndrome is just like, it's just a signal, right? It's just a sign that you're in territory that you did not expect to be in. You did not expect to get to, which I think maybe you can tell me if this resonates with you, but that might be a holdover from the immigrant mentality also of like, you know, coming from humble beginnings and, you know, very much similar in my circumstance, like we didn't have a lot growing up. So it was like, anything that I get is like, you get the scraps and you're just like, oh my God, thank you. I get to eat today. I get to have this today. I get to express myself today. I get to have this toy. I get to have this friend. I get to have this accolade. I get to have this, you know, partnership. I get to have this podcast. Like, wow, I get to experience so much. And just that feels like a natural expression of just that feeling of like, it's almost like an you said it was like a gratitude. It's just a perpetual gratitude of like, cool, let's keep going. But also I'm super grateful to have this and I'm not expecting it. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it keeps happening is amazing. And so let's keep going.
Yeah, no, seriously. Cause like, 2 weeks ago, no, actually just a week ago, mm-hmm. Blue from Rochester Contemporary, shout out to Blue.
Yeah, we love him.
Yeah. So he called me last week. And he was like, hey, do you want to come to this interview with me? And I'm like, wait, me? Seriously, me? So I did, right? And then I think a few days ago, we did another one, which is another TV interview. And I always think like, wow, I can't believe I'm here. Mm-hmm. And I feel so shy and like, you know, even a little embarrassed. Like, you know, did I do well? And I feel like I'm an oppressor right now because now I'm here in this podcast. Right?
Yeah, you are an oppressor, girl.
But yeah, you're totally right. Like, I always think about it. Like, I'm just so grateful for the opportunities. But at the same time, I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah, but it's the interesting mix because I think about it conceptually. It's like an interesting mix of the gratitude, but the fact that you have this like kind of faith and trust that this is, you said it earlier too, that this is my destiny. Like they selected you to write this book and to do this thing. It's like, you are not making the decision to say that I'm not worthy. You kind of said it in passing, like I don't deserve this, but it's really like, that's a byproduct of the gratitude part. But you're not literally denying these things. You're not saying someone inviting you to a thing and then you're not saying, I'm not going to go to it. I don't deserve to be there. I'm not going to bother. You're like, oh, wow, this is incredible. Okay. All right, let's go. Let's see.
It's almost like a fun byproduct of the creative process, right? Because you're making all this stuff that's interesting to you as the artist. And you're like, oh yeah, this is cool. And it's nostalgic. And I feel like it's important for me to make these things. And then like when you get recognition for it, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Great. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like I need to learn how to be more, not grateful, but more like, yes, I do deserve this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm not there yet because I always feel like, oh, maybe they made a mistake or something. Like,
yeah. We accidentally got you on the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. They just didn't find anyone better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't me literally following you on Instagram and then doing what you also do and like just sending a DM and being like, hey, we should be friends and also come on the podcast, you know?
Yeah, it's part of building that deep confidence that's hard to define until you've been doing the thing for so long that you consider yourself to be the expert. Mm-hmm. And I think the hardest thing to realize is when other people see you as the expert. Yeah. And when you're creating something that resonates with people so hard, you know, resonates with people in a deep, honest way that they think of you as somebody who sees them.
Yeah.
And they're seeing you at the same time, right? Because that identifying each other is why things work and why they perceive you that way.
It's almost like also like this might be a stretch, but it's like that feeling of, is there an adult here? Right. And then they're like, oh, shit, no, I'm it's you. One. You're the adult. And you're like, right. It's me? Really? I'm that? I'm the artist that they selected? I'm the person here on this podcast doing the thing? It's me? Okay. Like there's something interesting to that.
I know, because like there was one time St. John University or St. John Fisher or something. Yeah. They asked me to be a panelist. I was like, wait, really? And so it was like a bunch of educators, right? Like professors. And I was like in the panel, like as a author.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like looking at the other authors and I'm like, wow, they're already decorated and I'm here. But I was thinking like, okay, well, they paid me to be here. So I guess this is something that I should be like confident about. But I was like a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Because there were like really smart people in the room and I'm there. I'm like, hi. You know what I mean?
Let me tell you about my really cute lip balm.
Exactly.
What do you think drives you to keep saying yes though?
I don't know. I just feel like I owe it to people too. And I just want to keep talking about our culture. Mm-hmm. Not really about, well, the makeup is part of it, right? But yeah. I always think like my culture is first, the makeup is second. Because it's just a medium to me mm-hmm. that just happened to be like the people like it and it's consumable art. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a weird situation for me because I have to like do these businessy type of things as an artist.
Right.
But that's how I earn money too. So mm-hmm. it's a double-edged sword for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Are there any projects coming up that you're particularly excited about?
No, I ran out. I ran out.
Great. I'm excited about that.
That's
for
probably
you.
A good thing. Yeah.
I know.
Creative
so
pause is a great thing.
Yeah. Start from scratch, definitely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. reset.
Because this is my birthday month, right? April is my birthday month. So
happy
last
birthday.
Year, thank you. Last year, I did it's called Ka'arawan, which means birthday. Mm-hmm. I did a Ka'arawan collection, and then I made 32 cakes. You know, like I made not cakes, but like they look like realistic cakes. Mm-hmm. And then inside would be makeup of like mm-hmm. 32 items.
Yeah.
And I was thinking I went all out last year. Maybe this year I'll just be chill. Mm-hmm. I have nothing this year.
Just so. Like one cupcake and a candle. Exactly, and that's like the Instagram post. And you're like, I'm living life this year, guys.
Just photos of you resting in 33 different spots.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. I really like that.
It's like parkour, but planking. Remember when
parkour, but that. Resting.
Just planking. Remember that
I
thing?
I love planking.
In like 2010 or something when everyone was just laying randomly?
This is me resting on top of a dumpster.
I love these ideas.
Yeah, this is me
around
resting
Rochester.
On an amphitheater. This is me resting on top of a random car.
I like that yours went right away into like I'm resting on a garbage can.
Yeah,
I'm resting
very uncomfortable.
I'm resting in an alley near this detritus. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, you really.
I'm resting
right
in
away.
Front of this serial killer.
Oh my god!
And there we have it, just off the deep end, right in time for us to finish the podcast. I love it.
Yeah, you know, it would not be one of our podcast episodes if we did not look into the abyss once or twice.
Just get a little unhinged. So for folks who might want to find you, where can they find you, like online and otherwise?
Yeah, so I'm mostly on Instagram and TikTok. It's Filipinta Beauty. That's Filipinta. So like Filipina, but with a T.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Filipinta Beauty. Mm-hmm. And my website is filipinta.com. Where else am I? I think that's it. Yeah, I'm mostly on Filipinta Beauty Instagram.
Nice.
So if you need to contact me, I'm always there.
Is there a relevance to Filipinta, the name?
Yeah, so Filipin is like Filipina.
Yeah.
And then Pinta is, you know, paint. So basically it's like face paint for Filipinas.
Got it.
I love it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a blast.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thank you. It was really fun. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, maybe next time when you come on in like a year or so, we'll be able to tell the tale of whatever crazy idea spaghetti came from this creative reset that you're taking now. So.
You should just take photos of you throwing spaghetti.
Yes, for my birthday.
Or make spaghetti tchotchkes and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I made spaghetti lip balms. So
great.
We're there.
Heck yeah. Amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.
When your eyes need more shine, concealing, highlighting, that's designing. When you need more ideas, pasta hitting the wall, that's designing.